Keep of the bookmark. That's what I thought, yeah. As if my book flipped open, I lost a page, but it opened back at the same page. That's good. All right. And in this chapter, there are 47 verses, but we may go through this quite quickly, but some of you have got a program to go to, aren't you? Where's that program? You going after him?
No.
Okay. So, reading from Canto 7, Chapter 10, the final chapter in this, these are particular pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj. And we're hearing he's offered some nice prayers, and Lord Narasimhadev is offering benedictions. I'll just read the summary of this again, just to catch up. The summary of this chapter, that this chapter describes how the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narasimhadev disappeared after pleasing Prahlad Maharaj. It also describes a benediction given by Lord Shiva. So Lord Narasimhadev wanted to bestow benedictions upon Prahlad Maharaj one after another. But Prahlad Maharaj, thinking them impediments on the path of spiritual progress, did not accept any of them. Instead, he fully surrendered at the Lord's lotus feet. He said, "If anyone engaged in the devotional service of the Lord prays for personal sense gratification, he cannot be called a pure devotee or even a devotee. He may be called only a merchant engaged in the business of give and take. Similarly, a master who wants to please his servant after taking service from him is also not a real master. Prahlad Maharaj therefore did not ask anything from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, he said that if the Lord wanted to give him a benediction, he wanted the Lord to assure him that he would never be induced to take any benedictions for the sake of material desires." So very interesting. Exchanges of devotional service for lusty desires were always very prominent. As soon as lusty desires awaken, one's senses, mind, life, soul, religious principles, patience, intelligence, shyness, beauty, strength, memory, and truthfulness are all vanquished. One can render unalloyed devotional service only when there are no material desires in one's mind. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was greatly pleased with Prahlad Maharaj for his unalloyed devotion, yet the Lord provided him one material benediction that he would be perfectly happy in this world and live his next life in Vaikuntha. The Lord gave him the benediction that he would be the king of this material world until the end of the Manvantara millennium, and that although in this material world he would have the facility to hear the glories of the Lord and depend fully on the Lord, performing service to him in uncontaminated bhakti yoga. The Lord advised Prahlad to perform sacrifices through bhakti yoga, for this is the duty of a king. Prahlad Maharaj accepted whatever the Lord had offered him, and he prayed for the Lord to deliver his father. In response to his prayer, the Lord assured him that in the family of such a pure devotee as he, not only the devotee's father, but his forefathers for 21 generations are liberated. The Lord also asked Prahlad to perform the ritualistic ceremonies appropriate after his father's death. So that's interesting also, that he's asking to perform pure devotional service, and that still allows him to perform the Shraddha ceremony for his father, who wasn't even a devotee.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that because the Lord...
Yeah. Okay.
No, because the Lord orders him to do it, that's why he does it.
If it's favourable for devotional service, proper respect to that soul to do it, then it can be done. Of course, you know, his father attained liberation as soon as he was killed by the Lord. So therefore, he was completely purified.
Yeah.
His father was a ruler. above Prahlad, of course, is he was a ruler. He was born in the family of those possible, literally, to rule the entire universe. So it wasn't a big jump, in one sense. It's quite common that if the father is killed, then the son may take over. Still, Prahlad is performing his devotional service. And that becomes an example for us how to live in the world and have no material desires whatsoever, and yet to be in the most opulent position within this world. So Prahlad Maharaj is in there is no opulent position in this universe than that attained by Prahlad. And it shows that a devotee, not only was he able to perform pure devotional service as a young child without any training, he was also able to perform pure devotional service in the most opulent position within this world, only for the benefit of others and for the satisfaction of the Lord. So there are many different... it is for the benefit of others. Prahlad has nothing to gain. And it also shows that, the Lord and his representative, they are both perfect. Perfect and complete. There is nothing for them to gain by accepting service. Both the Lord and his devotee. There's nothing to lose in this world, there's nothing to gain. So, whether one is in the most poor position or in the most elevated position, there is nothing for them to gain, nothing for them to lose, and therefore there's no reason for them not to do their duty in any position in this world in bhakti yoga. So, there are many different... lessons that we can learn from Prahlad's example of being a pure devotee in that opulent position. In other words, material success is not just the domain of the demons, but the domain of the demons. Actually, every position in this world is meant for a devotee as a representative of the Lord. From the topmost position to the lowest position, every position is actually meant that the devotee should be in that position. And a devotee can be in that position and perform pure devotional service. and not be contaminated. So... Then Lord Brahma, who was also present, offered many prayers to the Lord, expressing his obligation to the Lord for having offered benedictions to Prahlad Maharaj. Strangely enough, although we learn this from Prahlad Maharaj, And sometimes we see that devotees who change ashram from brahmachari to grihastha feel that somehow they're no longer in a position to perform a very nice standard pure of service. They feel that somehow now everything is spoiled. They do. You know, there's a common thing in ISKCON. So, or conversely, people may feel that, one has to have some particular material qualification to serve the Lord. So Prahlad is just smashing all these different concepts of bhakti. Bhakti is pure and independent from anything else. It is not dependent, there's no prerequisite for bhakti. It is not dependent on jnana, karma, istanga. And it can be formed by anyone. If one has that desire to do that, then that person is able to do it. So then Lord Brahma, who was also present, offered many prayers to the Lord, expressing his obligation to the Lord for having offered benedictions to Prahlad Maharaj. The Lord advised Lord Brahma not to offer benedictions. To Asuras, as he had to Hiranyakashipu, for such benedictions indulged them. Then Lord Narasimha disappeared. See, so you can offer the devotees, according to the level of bhakti, all sorts of benedictions. Not that they want them. But you can't do that to others, especially demons. Then Lord Narasimhadev disappeared. On that day, Prahlad Maharaj was installed on the throne of the world by Lord Brahma and Sukracharya. Thus, Narada Muni described the character of Prahlad Maharaj for Yudhishthira Maharaj, and he further described the killing of Ravana by Lord Ramchandra and the killing of Sisipala and Dantavakra in Dwapara Yuga. Sisipala, of course, had merged into the existence of the Lord and thus achieved Sayujya Mukti. So that's when he finally achieved liberation. So Narada Muni praised Yudhishthira Maharaj because the Supreme Lord Krishna was the greatest well-wisher and friend of the Pandavas and almost always stayed in the house. Thus, the fortune of the Pandavas was greater than that of Prahlad Maharaj. Lord Narada Muni described how the demon Maya Dhanava constructed Tripura for the demons, who became very powerful and defeated the demigods. Because of this defeat, Lord Rudra, Shiva, dismantled Tripura. Thus he became famous as Tripurari. For this, Rudra is very much appreciated and worshipped by the demigods. This narration occurs at the end of this chapter. So I'll just read text number 14 again. At the end. So at the end of this chapter, we're going to hear a little synopsis of a couple of those pastimes there as well. And so the last one we read was text 14, is it? 13, and so we're up to 14. I'll just read 13 just to recap. My dear Prahlad Maharaj, while you're in this material world, you will exhaust all the reactions of pious activity by feeling happiness, and by acting piously, you will neutralize impious activities. Because of the powerful time factor, you will give up your body, but the glories of your activities will be sung in the upper planetary systems, and being fully freed from all bondage, you'll return home back to Godhead. So we discussed that verse at length last week. It was very, very interesting. I advise anyone who's, everyone heard last week's class? The week before, the last class, yeah. It's a very interesting conversation based on that verse there. If you miss it, go back and hear it. Very important.
Here
you
say that pious activity
would
neutralize impious activities.
Yeah, yeah.
My understanding was they don't neutralize each other, they
cancel
each other.
No, done through bhakti. The idea is that if you're going to do some pious activity, substitute some bhakti that's similar to what you need to do. And if there's some impious activity, you do some bhakti which fulfills that. So the idea is to be expert in just doing bhakti. But there are expectations from others that maybe we should do some karmic activity of a pious or impious nature. But devotees become very expert, they just do the bhakti. And for others it appears that they're doing something that they want. Oh, we want you to do this pious thing, we want you to do this. So it's Prabhupada says there. So we had a big discussion on that last lesson. And Prabhupada says in that purport, one should live in the material world very expertly. The material world is known as the world of duality because one sometimes has to act impiously and sometimes has to act piously. Although one does not want to act impiously, the world is so fashioned that there is always danger. Thus, even when performing devotional service, a devotee has to create many enemies. A devotee should expertly manage to think always of the Supreme Lord so that the reactions of suffering cannot touch him. This is the expert management of papa punya, pious and impious activities. So always doing things that are by thinking of the Lord, what is pleasing to the Lord, and in this way we can manage pious and impious activities while remaining in this world and not be touched by them. So, and as you imagine, as a king or the ruler of the world, he's looking after everyone, from the karmis to the demons, looking after everyone, and yet he's only doing bhakti. So very, very clever. So, you know, in the future, you know, we will want some devotees to be politicians. They'll have to look after the people who are doing abortions, the people who are not doing abortions, the murderers in the prisons, the meat eaters, the drunkards, the drug addicts. Have to look after, if they become the ruler, they have to look after everyone and yet not be implicated in pious and impious activities. Is it? Otherwise, how will the devotee rule? They're very expert. So we will have to learn that. Text 14. One who always remembers your activities and my activities also, and who chants the prayers you have offered, becomes free in due course of time from the reactions of material activities. Well, we've done that. We've chanted all the prayers by Prahlad Maharaj and heard the pastime. Here it is stated that anyone who chants and hears about the activities of Prahlad Maharaj and in relationship with Prahlad's activities, the activities in the Shringadev, gradually becomes free from all the bondage of fruitive activities, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. So by hearing about how Prahlad remained in this world and was detached from pious and impious activities, just by hearing about them, one gains that ability not to be touched by pious. What to speak of as one becomes mature in devotional service. Just by hearing about these activities, one develops that quality that Prahlad had. And Bhagavad Gita 2:15 and 2:56. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. And I think we discussed this a little bit too, that the next one, one who is not disturbed in spite of the threefold miseries, who is not elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. So Prabhupada paraphrases all that, that a devotee should not be aggrieved in an awkward position, nor should he feel extraordinarily happy in material opulence. This is the way of expert management of material life. Because a devotee knows how to manage expertly, he is called Jivan Mukta. So, of course, as soon as one becomes disturbed by the threefold miseries, the stressful situations, or related with happiness, something coming related to this material world and how it affects one, one's material body and mind and possessions and relatives, one will not be able to be in the transcendental mutual position. One will not be able to expertly manage material life as Prahlad did. One has to be constantly able to think of the Lord and the Lord's happiness, Krishna's happiness. And so this is the Jivan Mukta position, a person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence and words, is a liberated person even within this material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. Prabhupada says, because of constantly engaging in devotional service in any condition of life, a devotee is free from all material bondage. And then, quoting the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.21, Srila Jiva Goswami cites this verse, even one born in a family of meat eaters is purified if he engages in devotional service. So, anyone who chants about the pure life and activities, Prahlad Maharaj is freed from the reactions of material activities. So that supports that. So, this smaranam, one always remembers the activities of Prahlad and Lord Narasimha. Becomes free in due course of time because we can't imitate. In due course of time means that we can't imitate Prahlad Maharaj. You know, in Prabhupada's lectures on the, must have been the sixth chapter, where Prahlad, you know, was blessed by the Lord, touched him on the head, and he was in complete trance. Prahlad offered his prayers in complete absorption, and Prabhupada explains that, you know, Prahlad Maharaj is Nitya Siddha, and because you know, and he says even within the womb, you know, although we hear in the purport that Prahlad Maharaj is considered a mixture of Sadhana Siddha, Nitya Siddha, because, but you know, once one comes to the platform of Sadhana Siddha, then very quickly he also comes to the platform Nitya Siddha, and they're considered on an equal level. And so, you know, some of Prahlad Maharaj's activities in previous life and the activities that he performs to demonstrate how to perform devotional service in the, you know, in that life, with you know, he's showing us how to go through the different stages of devotional service in one sense. You know, he took shelter of the spiritual master, Narada Muni. You know, he offered service to, you know, senior devotees like Lord Brahma. You know, that you go forward and offer prayers. So he was doing that as a service to Lord Brahma, to the Vaishnavas. These are the activities of the Sadhana Siddha. That, you know, they're accepting a spiritual master to be elevated in Krishna consciousness. But actually he was practically Nitya Siddha, Prabhupada says, from the very beginning, because Nitya Siddha means that They, you know, sat in the sitter, they may have forgotten Krishna at some stage, and then by, you know, practicing under the guidance of a devotee, they become perfect and never forget Krishna from that point. But Prabhupada points out, actually, Prahlad was thinking of Krishna within the womb. So actually, there was no time in this life where he ever forgot Krishna. So therefore, actually, you know, even within the womb, it's actually Nitya Siddha, even though it appears that he was doing some sadhana, siddha activities as if he was coming to the platform of, by following the guru, etc. And also his activities, you know, in devotional service as a ruler, you know, demonstrating how we may practice different rules and regulations of devotional service. He's doing that for the benefit of others, even though he's Nitya Siddha. So we can't imitate that, that we're just always going to think of Krishna, like Prahlad Maharaj. You know, gradually by practicing devotional service, we get the qualification that our minds are so fixed in the devotional service and the nectar of devotional service and Krishna consciousness, that gradually we become aloof to the happiness and distress of this world, and we're able to remain fixed in our of that. So as these qualities that we see in Prahlad Maharaj manifest in our sadhana, we become sadhana siddha, then yes, we attain that same position as Prahlad Maharaj. But for those who are able to, you know, from their previous lives, they're perhaps almost sadhana siddha, and then within a very short time they're reading the Bhagavatam and they take up, you know, they hear Prahlad's activities and they come to that platform again of never forgetting Krishna in this life, then practically that, you know, can be very instant. So that's why it says for some time, but depending on how quickly we come to that platform that Prahlad Maharaj did. In due course of time. So like Prahlad Maharaj, as we said, he was apparently sadhana siddha, and literally right from birth he, you know, came to that point of never forgetting Krishna again. And but for us it may take longer. And we see here also, you know, we've just to recap that, you know, Prahlad Maharaj didn't ask for any benedictions from the Lord. He says back here, he says, O my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. So,
He actually asked second one as your first father.
Yeah. But you note the wording here of Prahlad Maharaj that one, he's not asking for any material fulfillment, any material desires on any level. But even on the spiritual platform, he's not saying, I want this. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, he says, a devotee never says, I want. So, he's saying, if the Lord so desires. Yeah. And a devotee, even, you know, may I be engaged like this, may I serve you like this. Actually, you know, devotees, unless it's in the proper mood, but generally they don't say, I want. Even in regards to devotional service. If you so desire, dear Lord, that I serve you in this way, then may you benedict me if you are desirable to offer benediction. So it's leaving it up to Krishna. That's a very interesting point. I do, you know, because I do a lot of ceremonies for people. Quite often, people are wanting something, and one of the things I try to do at the beginning of the ceremony is say, "Don't I want? You know, don't have a want. Although it appears that you have a want, don't have a want. You know, just you know, sort of try to." Pray, you know, offer the prayer to the Lord in the proper way. So always trying to teach, following in the footsteps. That somehow or another, you know, if we can just engage ourselves in performing jagya or chanting Hare Krishna for the pleasure of Krishna, may you be pleased. Then, if you want to offer us some benediction, you know our situation, then you do that, Lord. But for our purposes, we perform this jagya for your benefit, my dear. You know, it's quite tricky, isn't it? It's, you know, Abhishek, jagya. So, you know, it's trying to learn that process. We've cooked so much nice food. We've, you know, offered some ghee and some grains and banana. We have no one. Let you just be happy. And we're happy that you're satisfied. You know our situation. If you decide that there's some benediction you offer for our benefit, so be it. You know, it's interesting because I know that, you know, you get called to someone's house for something, you know. You know, for their housewarming, child, you know, education, you know, problems, you know. So you've got to teach them. So, you know, I don't just automatically just, yes, we'll do some ceremony, we'll do some abhishek, and you want that, and, you know, you'll get it. You know, that's not my, I'm not in that line. And I have to gradually try to teach others that.
So, even we should decide to serve Krishna in a particular way.
No, we can decide to serve Krishna in a particular way.
Because you're saying that devotees do not ask for anything.
That's right.
So then, if a devotee wants to serve Krishna in a particular way, then
that's okay.
Is, I mean, asking that instead is more than that. You'd rather he leave Krishna to decide how he wants to serve it.
Yeah. You know, love is voluntary, and love is also offered. So the Prabhupada says that you know, each of us has Krishna created each of us to increase his transcendental bliss, and each one of us is, you know, an eternal soul given, you know, our eternal identity and individuality to serve Krishna in a particular way. There's a particular unique individual happiness coming from that spirit soul. It's not coming from any others. So we say that you know, this is your desire. This is why you've given me existence. So therefore, let me do that. And the unique way that I serve you is like this. As servant, as friend, conjugal lover. Because we understand, you know, on the spiritual platform, you understand your eternal nature, identity. Individual nature, and you want to, and you know that Krishna has given you that eternal individual nature so you can increase his happiness in that particular way. So that's his desire. So yes, let me serve you in that particular way, Krishna, because that is your desire. See? So even, and you know, so it's very subtle, isn't it? So we can, you know, you can serve Krishna according to your unique capacity and what have you. The more we become purified in Krishna consciousness, the more we realize what our unique contribution is. You know, when I came to Krishna consciousness, you know, from a hippie background, I was a musician and an artist, and I quite often would ask, you know, oh, can I paint the deity's eyes or do a painting Krishna or play some music? No. We need you to go out and collect some money. They do, that's right. At that time, there wasn't actually, it would have been sense gratification when the bills can't even get paid, and I've got the ability to do that, you know. Not that I had the ability, but, you know, I could tough it out. I could tough it out on the streets. So, you know, that was my ability. And, you know, I was convinced that, you know, getting money for Krishna was a good thing, not, you know, by hook or by crook, let's get that. So I had that intelligence, so let me utilize that. It was so difficult that it forced, you know, I always had an attraction for the book, but it really forced me to read Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada's books were like a strength, a saving grace. It just took my mind off the fact that I was probably doing the thing in this world that I most would never do. I would never be a salesman knocking on people's doors, you know, trying to get money from them, wearing a wig, you know, and that's right. Hare Krishna. So thanks for coming. So somehow or another, you know, it forced me to enter into the transcendental books more and more, and that became my world. The sales become almost external. Sometimes I actually become oblivious to it, and I was just always absorbed in Prabhupada's books. So somehow or another, and then because of all that study and reading and what have you, then Krishna had, you know, I never expected that I would be like the teaching would be one of the main things I did. I thought I'd always be, you know, just asking a few silly questions in class, and that was probably, you know, the best I could contribute. So, you know, Krishna had a different idea. But, you know, as I went on in devotional service, and, you know, I understood that actually not many devotees had a real taste for the books, and not many devotees were properly understanding them. And actually, my spiritual master said that to me one time. He said, in a letter he wrote to me, he said, Gangeshwar, Krishna has blessed you with an ability to understand sort of Prabhupada's books and teachings and convey that message to others. He said, if you develop that to your full capacity, Krishna will be very pleased. And, you know, so only after many years, you know, and now sort of situated in that, I understand that many of the things that I would have done were almost more my hippie conditioning, more so than Krishna understood. I have other, you know, after purification, there were some other things you could do in devotional service that you probably don't even know. I'd never expected to be doing, you know, so many home programs and ceremonies as well. It just never, you know. I remember once seeing a devotee who was engaged in such, they were very rare in those days, even in ISKCON. And I looked at him and he had the kabachas and that, and I thought, this, you know, he just looks so beautiful, so transcendental, and a desire entered my heart, you know. You know, I wonder if I could ever do like that. But that was like a fleeting thought. Okay, back out on Sankirtan. What are you doing? Standing around the courtyard, you know, spacing out. So, but I never... So, even in this lifetime, in our service in this material body, we gradually understand that there are services that we may have a capacity for when we become more and more purified. And if that pleases Krishna, then yes, I want to do that for Krishna. See? So my spiritual master said to me, you have that capacity, you develop that fully. I understood that I had that capacity, it was confirmed by my spiritual master, and I wanted to do that, but then knowing that if it's pleasing to the spiritual master, then yes, it's pleasing to Krishna. So now Krishna, it's so just, you know, if my spiritual master is saying do that, then I know that Krishna is happy. Because Krishna is happy, then I want to do that. Particularly. Like that. See? So, if someone tried to, you know, disrupt, like we're in the middle of doing Bhakti Vedanta, forget that. You know, we want you to go and build a brick wall, you know, out in the paddock. Keep the kangaroos, you know, out of the crops. I could do that, but actually I wouldn't. If it, you know, because I'm quite, you know, that it's not sense gratification for me to want to continue to do this, knowing that this gives Krishna pleasure. I remember one time, for instance, I was in New Zealand, I was doing university programs. Now, at the university programs, you get a lot of, you know, women's libbers, you know, they want equality, you've got to be very careful how you treat them. You know, there's people from the third sex of all different varieties, you've got to be very careful how you treat them. You know, there's people from different races. So, you've got to be very careful what you say and how you deal with people. So, at one stage, the temple devotees asked me to look after the BBT, to run the BBT in Auckland, and they would get someone else to do the university programs, which I was doing every week. You know, a couple every week, couple, two or three different universities, prasadam. And preaching. Anyway, I was very attracted to Prabhupada's book, so yes, okay, let me, you know, do that BBT. And they said, and this devotee will take over. And I said, oh no, no, please, please. You know, you know, I'll just keep doing it, but I don't want that devotee to take over. Because that devotee, he was a male chauvinist. He treated women really badly. He was very, very strong, forceful. There was an arrogance. I mean, you know, he's a good friend of mine, but, you know, he would say things just straight out that would offend people. Because when he preached from the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says this in the Bhagavatam, you know, you're a spineless, you know, you got no backbone, you're a dancing dog in the hands of a woman. You like a bit of halibut with that? You know. So you see there that we can have certain strong desires, because I knew it wouldn't be for Krishna's satisfaction. You know, we can have strong desires. I know sometimes I've done a program and someone, a young devotee who may be looking after some of those families, is about to give a talk, and I know that that person, I don't have confidence that what they're going to say and their attitude. And I will say to them, no, let me, you know, if you don't mind, I'd like to speak. See? So, you know, for Krishna's satisfaction, for Krishna's happiness, we can have strong desires in devotional service. You know, when it's related, you know, we know, You know, say someone's a really bad cook and they're about to cook things and you've got these nice beans. No, 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 let me cook. I want you serving up that. I know how you cook. Let's cook something. We'll cook something nice. The special preaching opportunity like that. So you can have some strong desires. But it's for Krishna's happiness, for Prabhupada's happiness. The Prabhupada would be more pleased something be done properly than anyone's going to do a nonsense job at that. So for Krishna's satisfaction, you can have strong desires, you know, to do things in a particular way. And, you know, when Prabhupada went to Honolulu, and sometimes he'd go to different temples, and Prabhupada said, you dress in the deities very beautifully, that Krishna is inspiring you and giving you a direction in your heart how to do this so nicely. Is it, you know, very expert at that. And so he was, you know, giving them credit that, you know, you do what you're doing like that, and whoever's dressing these deities, you keep doing that. It's very pleasing to Prabhupada, very pleasing to Krishna. So, you know, if others want to dress, well, they're going to have to understand that these people are pleasing Prabhupada. So they're going to come in and do some nonsense. Then those people who know that Prabhupada is pleased with that nice standard, they're going to say, no, you just stand aside, you learn a bit. And you know, when you come up to a certain standard, this is pleasing to Prabhupada, we're not going to have anything less like that. So, you know, what is pleasing to Prabhupada, what is pleasing to Guru, is pleasing to Krishna, and we can have strong desires in that way. This is Krishna's happiness, therefore, you know, we won't accept anything less, but we certainly can improve. And if someone can do something better, then I will become their servant. Because it's for Krishna's desire at that. If someone can do something better than me, it's all about Krishna, then I will become their servant. I will step aside. You know, one time Prabhupada was on the asana and a devotee had to adjust a picture behind him, and he said, Prabhupada, I have to put my foot just on the edge of your chair to adjust this picture. Prabhupada said, for the service of Krishna, you can stand on my head. You see? So, it's a very interesting, you know, we're not Mayavadis, that, and you know, again, when I do house programs, you know, I say to the devotees who own that house, everything belongs to Krishna. It's not like the old days, that, you know, you've got two dhotis, you put them in the wash, and the other brahmacharis, you know, you go to get your dhotis. You see that the other brahmacharis are wearing your dhotis, and you say, can I have my dhoti back? Oh, look, it's all Krishna's. Don't be so attached. Everything belongs to Krishna. And, you know, gradually, you know, we mentioned this sort of phenomenon to Ramai Swami. He was temple president up in Sydney in King's Cross for a while, was a brahmacharya. He said, that's Mayavadi. That's not Vaishnava, that's Mayavadi. Oh, everything is one, you know. Everything is Krishna's. Now, Krishna has given this dhoti to this person to wear in his service. And he's given this dhoti to that one. He's given this house to this family. They'll preach from there. No other family is going to come as all Krishna's. You know, you guys move up in the back room. You know, we're going to move a few of our friends. So, there's... I'm spending a little bit of time on this because there's a lot of anomalies in ISKCON as to everything belongs to Krishna, therefore it's all one. No, you can have desires to serve Krishna in a particular way, and it's not sense gratification if you know that that pleases Krishna. Okay. So we're talking about here, you know, One should not be disturbed by happiness and distress. Sometimes a devotee, you know, comes up to another devotee. The devotee's doing nice service. Someone comes in and says, you go and do something else. I'll take over here, knowing that they're going to get the credit for it, you know, because the big boss is going to come in and see them finishing off and go, oh, did you do all that? Yeah, I did. But, you know, so And then the devotee become unhappy. Oh, but I was making this nice garland for Krishna. Ah, that's it. Don't, you know, Krishna says in the Gita, don't be disturbed by distress. You know? So you're mundane, you know, I've asked you to go somewhere else. I'll finish that garland. And here I see you're in distress. So, you know, Krishna's saying, don't be disturbed by happiness and distress. You're such a neophyte. No wonder, you know, I'm you know, got the right to move you away. So there's so much nonsense, you know, that goes on. And people cannot identify, you know, how to apply this philosophy on the spiritual platform. But a lot of that goes on, right? So any questions, comments? So very nice.
What about just the situations?
Yeah, adjust the situation by understanding the Bhagavatam, and the guiding factor is this, is that what decides what is proper and what is not proper is what is Krishna's happiness. That service, which is the most pleasing to Guru, in the line of Srila Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna, that should be done. Their happiness should be fulfilled. If, therefore, Prabhupada wanted to preach in the West, his spiritual master wanted it, his senior godbrother is saying, no, you stay here in this temple, maybe spend 10 years or something, edit this magazine. Prabhupada understood. You're saying that my desire is sense gratification, which is what he was doing. His senior godbrother was actually almost presenting Prabhupada, you know, for your own sense gratification, you know, you want to do this. I'm the guru, you know, you serve me and then you'll be on the spiritual platform. Prabhupada understood. But guru wants this, so that I shall do. See? So, it's a very important principle and can very even, you see, on the level. Prabhupada's senior godbrother did not understand this principle. On that level, such a difficult understanding it is. Don't expect that 90% of the devotees in the average temple won't understand this. As Prabhupada's, you know, senior godbrothers could not understand that Guru, his happiness, representing Krishna's happiness, decides, you know, that service must be done. And that the desire of a devotee that, yes, that service must be done, I have a strong desire to do it, that's not sense gratification, that's not attachment, that's complete detachment. I only care for Krishna's happiness. You can criticize me, you can beat me, you can be, you know, disfriend me. I don't care. Guru's happiness, Krishna's happiness will be done. I don't. And that is actually the mood of Srimati Radharani. Asleshava paraditam vanasana madasana mamam tam karotu vayita tata vavaditulam padum apananathas to save and apuraha. My Lord, I know no one but Krishna as my Lord, and even if he handles me, what is that? And he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, or makes me broken hearted but not being present before me. He is completely free to do anything and everything, for he is always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. Unconditionally, your happiness is my happiness. No matter how you treat me, or you're in everyone's heart, you're in the heart of this person who's treating me very badly, or this circumstance, my happiness is not an issue. It doesn't matter how you treat me, Krishna. Your happiness unconditionally is my only happiness. You know, that is that verse. And that is what Prahlad is saying. Therefore, devotee, there's no wants. I want this, I want that. And at the same time, if it's for Krishna's happiness, the devotee wants this, and I want that, and I want this, and I want it now. So, text 15 to 17. Prahlad Maharaj said, O Supreme Lord, because you are so merciful to the fallen souls, I ask you only for one benediction. I know that my father at the time of his death had already been purified by your glance upon him. But because of his ignorance of your beautiful power and supremacy, he was unnecessarily angry at you, falsely thinking that you were the killer of his brother. Thus, he directly blasphemed your lordship, the spiritual master of all living beings, and committed heavily sinful activities directed against me, your devotee. I wish that he be excused for these sinful activities. Purport. Although Hiranyakashipu was purified as soon as he came in contact with the Lord's lap and the Lord saw him, Prahlad Maharaj still wanted to hear from the Lord's own mouth that his father had been purified by the Lord's causeless mercy. Prahlad Maharaj offered this prayer to the Lord for the sake of his father. As a Vaishnava's son, despite all the inconveniences imposed upon him by his father, he could not forget his father's affection. Now, Prahlad Maharaj, again, is not asking for anything. In one sense, he's offering this prayer for the sake of his father. We know from Prahlad's teachings that already he has stated that he knows that it's the Lord's desire that all living entities somehow be helped to go back to the spiritual world. And Prahlad's, he wants to be able to serve the devotees who are helping people to go back to the spiritual world. Amongst those personalities is Hiranyakashipu himself. See, on the platform of Uttama Adhikari, they don't distinguish between any living entity, who is qualified, who is unqualified for the Lord's mercy. The envious, the atheists, they see, all spirit souls, and they're desiring all of them. See, sometimes devotees may become very angry at some of the demons. Go to hell, you rascal. Mate, you never know Krishna. almost curse them. But, the Uttama Adhikari is not like that. So they're not just selecting a few people that are happy to preach to, and this person will have prasadam, this person will have prasadam, but no prasadam for you. You demon. So Prahlad Maharaj is not on that platform. Uttama Adhikari, he's a preacher. But also, as Prabhupada mentions here, Prahlad's quite confident that Hiranyakashipu being completely purified. So just so that the Lord himself proclaims what happened, how Hiranyakashipu was purified, for the glorification of the Lord himself. By answering this, by the Lord explaining that as we were here, the Lord will have to reveal that he is all good. So the glories of the Lord will be spoken by the Lord himself, that he is all good. That whether he kills someone or befriends someone, they both get the same result. They both actually become completely purified and come to the spiritual platform, free from all sinful reaction. Krishna is all good. So, through Prahlad's prayers, the Lord will be glorified, and that glorification will be spoke by the Lord himself, will reveal, his own transcendental glories. And also, Hiranyakashipu, like any soul within the universe, will become liberated. There are devotees like Vasudev Dutt who prayed to the Lord. So he, again, pure devotee. I have no desire, but if you would offer me a benediction, you please, every living entity within this universe, let me take their sinful reactions. For every single living entity, Let them be liberated and go back to Godhead, and I will suffer their reactions life after life. You know? So, you know, Prahlad is like that. It's selfless. You know, it's a very selfless activity like that. So, and Prahlad knows that it is very pleasing to the Lord that every living entity go back to Godhead, and he's not making distinction that the Lord just wants the, you know, the nice pious Hindus to go back, but you know, not the demons. The Lord wants everyone. That's the ultimate Alakari understanding. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Prahlad, O most pure, O greatly saintly person, your father has been purified along with 21 forefathers in your family. Because you were born in this family, the entire dynasty has been purified." Purport. The word tri saptabhi means 7 multiplied by 3. In one's family, one can count back 4 or 5 generations to one's great-grandfather, even one's great-great-grandfather. But since the Lord mentions 21 forefathers, this indicates that the benediction expands to other families also. Before the present family in which one has taken birth, one must have been born in other families. Oh. Thus, when a Vaishnava takes birth in a family, by the grace of the Lord, he purifies not only that family, but also the families of his previous births. It's quite remarkable, isn't it? And so, how purifying is the Lord? So here, Lord, Prahlad wants to hear the Lord's glories. The Lord, Nrisingadev wants to hear Prahlad's glories. But the point is, if the Lord's devotee, who's in contact, just by being in contact with the Lord, he purifies to Satan. You know, what is the purification effect of the Lord himself? That we understand. Lord Nrisingadev says, "Whenever and wherever there are peaceful, equipoised devotees who are well behaved and decorated with all good qualities, that place and the dynasties there, even if condemned, are purified." Purport. Wherever exalted devotees stay, not only are they and their dynasties, but the entire country is purified. "My dear Prahlad, King of the Daityas, because of being attached to devotional service to me, my devotee does not distinguish between lower and higher living entities. In all respects, he is never jealous of anyone." So that's the ultima adhikara. "Those who follow your example will naturally become my pure devotees. You are the best example of my devotee, and others should follow in your footsteps." So we can pray like, we can ask that benediction. That's actually within the realms of pure devotional service of the Uttama Adhikari of a very elevated, that, "Dear Lord, offer me this benediction. If you so like, if it so pleases you, if it is your happiness, which you're saying in the Bhagavad Gita it is, let me somehow or another help these conditioned souls go back to the spiritual world and be purified. Although I'm not qualified to do so, somehow or another, Lord, may you purify them by the benediction of your holy name." So, in this connection, Srila Madhvacharya quotes a verse from the Skanda Purana. So very, very reminiscent of the prayer that Prabhupada offered in Boston. "You know, you have brought me here, Lord. Make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. Help me to purify all these fallen conditioned souls." So he's asking a benediction from the Lord because he knows that is your happiness. And somehow you've brought me here, so you want me to do something. So then you please, because if that's your happiness, that you've brought me here to do something, then you make me do something. So you're asking benedictions that are not contrary to pure devotional service. And the purport goes on. "There are many, many devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as they have been enumerated in Srimad Bhagavatam as follows. Of the 12 authorized devotees, Lord Brahma, Narada, Shiva, Kapila, Manu, and so on. Prahlad Maharaj is understood to be the best example. Quite nice, isn't it? Of the 12 authorized devotees, Prahlad Maharaj is the best example. Very nice. My dear child, your father has already been purified just by the touch of my body at the time of his death. Nonetheless, the duty of a son is to perform the Shraddha, ritualistic ceremony after his father's death so that his father may be promoted to a planetary system where he may become a good citizen and devotee. So he becomes promoted to become a good citizen and a devotee. That's the natural consequence. Report. In this regard, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti the Course says that although Hiranyakashipu was already purified, he had to take birth in a higher planetary system to become a devotee again. Prahlad Maharaj was advised to perform the ritualistic ceremony as a matter of etiquette for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under no circumstances want to stop the regulative principles. Madhva Muni also instructs, when the demons Madhu and Kaitaba were killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their kinsmen also observed the ritualistic ceremonies so that these demons could return home back to Godhead. And here you see how a devotee performs the Shraddha ceremony. Performing the Shraddha ceremony with the devotees performing in such a way that this departed soul may return home back to Godhead. Now, in India, of course, when they offer Shraddha, they offer Pinda, which is sometimes, it should be Vishnu Prasad, but sometimes it's just little, you know, balls of food and water. They may not have offered it. They could have offered it to anyone. They may not have offered it to anyone. For a lot of them these days, as long as they see a little food and water, that's, you know, that's all they care about. They don't know what the priest is doing. But actually the devotee, we offer Mahaprasad. Now what happens when we offer Mahaprasad? That means that somewhere that spirit soul is then going to, devotees will come to them and give them Mahaprasad to eat. Otherwise, it's not just a ritual. We're giving Mahaprasad. We're praying through by me to the super soul. Here is Mahaprasad for this departed soul. That means that soul will get Mahaprasad. And who distributes Mahaprasad? The devotees. Then we read a chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Usually I read a whole chapter. When the devotees approach and they give that spirit soul Mahaprasad, the same instructions that I'm giving, or the priest is giving here, they will hear. You know, you take to devotional service, you get out of this cycle of birth and death, you fix your mind on Krishna, the Personality of Godhead, and you try to make your way back to Godhead. They're eating Mahaprasad. If they get Mahaprasad from devotees, they'll hear some Gita. You ever known a devotee to give out prasad and not speak something? And they'll hear the holy name. So, our performance of Shraddha is, you know, on those lines here, that we're actually assisting them. They'll go to, you know, a planetary system. They may go to Pitraloka. This, you know, they may have some desire, but also the devotee's desire that you go back to Godhead and that the Lord somehow help them. The Lord will reciprocate with the devotee, you know, offering that, you know, that prayer. Dear Lord, you help the spirit soul. So the Lord reciprocates with the devotee performing the Shraddha to assist that person to go back to Godhead, and that person's also fulfilling their desires that they want to go to Pitraloka or this one or that one. But while they're there, the devotee's benediction will also affect them. So it appears to be something similar, but it's done on a transcendental platform. And although Sometimes you can't even explain that to the people you're doing the Shraddha for, but the devotee is still praying in that way. But for the persons doing, they may only understand up to this, that the devotee may say, it's very good that you're performing your duty as a son. And that's as much as they will understand. And because the devotee is, you know, actually if it wasn't for the devotees, you know, in Kali Yuga, no one would be performing any ceremonies. I forget the whole thing. The devotees are literally, you know, the ones who are maintaining the regulative principles and demonstrating how it should be done. So, you know, for the sake of teaching people to follow the regulative principles, if that's what they can understand, and also for helping people to go back to Godhead, even one is a devotee, one just like Prabhupada, he performed the marriage ceremonies. You know, you must follow the regulative principles. You can't live like hippies, you know, and bachelors and what have you. You have to get married, and I will, you know, be your priest and perform the regulative principles so you learn that this regulative principle must be followed. Even if you don't stay a devotee for a long time, you know, whatever you can do, but while you're here, you must follow the regulative principles that, you know, support devotional service. So both in you know, Prabhupada was presenting the regulative principles and also the practices of bhakti like that. And yet he, and Prabhupada said, he said, in India, they criticize me that, you know, he is a very good priest. That was their criticism. He's not like his Uttama Adhikari, Vaishnav, transcendentalist, Nitya Siddha, exalted devotee of the Lord, you know, on the platform of the Pandavas and Pallava. You know, he's a very good priest doing some rituals. That's how they criticized Prabhupada, said that was a criticism. The same criticism, you know, I get still, even from devotees in ISKCON, for doing, you know, ceremonies. Quite often devotees still in this temple, you know, sometimes they sit down, they listen to what I'm saying, they say, oh, you know, I just saw you doing some rituals like that, you know, some, you know, you're just like a ritualistic sort of a person. Yeah, even Durga Puja, yeah. But even in this temple now, you know, some devotees, because they don't know what I'm doing, they just see I'm doing rituals. And so, oh, you're doing rituals like that. But they, even Prabhupada, you know, was criticised in that way. But here we see with Prahlad Maharaj, he's the topmost. What does Krishna say? He says, says Prahlad Maharaj was advised to perform the ritualistic ceremony as a matter of etiquette for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under no circumstances want to stop the regulative principles. So Prahlad is being described as such an elevated devotee that he's the best amongst the 12 Mahajans. Such a pure devotee, and yet he's performing the regulative principles even for the sake that that must not stop. Even if one is not coming to devotional service, that must not stop. We should not deter people from following regular principles. And yet he remains the most elevated pure devotee, which is exactly what Prabhupada did, and we follow in that line. These things are all very elevated subject matters, and as you know, as you travel around Australia or you go to different places in the world, you will find that unless you know devotees properly understand the Bhagavatam, there will be so many misunderstandings. You can guarantee that unless they've studied the Bhagavatam properly, they will have the wrong idea. You can almost guarantee that. You know. generally. You don't expect very, you know, unless someone is a very sincere devotee, even if they haven't properly studied the Bhagavatam, but if they're very sincere in their service, very humble, very pure-hearted, they will naturally understand that, you know, oh, such and such is a nice devotee. If Prabhupada is a nice devotee and he's doing weddings, then that doesn't take you out of pure devotional service. You don't have to be a real scholar of anything. If Prabhupada's an exalted devotee, he's doing this to make us follow the regular principles, obviously that's acceptable. But in ISKCON, strange enough, people don't understand that. And in India, even Prabhupada's godbrothers struggled to understand what Prabhupada was doing. So it's not that easy to understand. And the pastimes at Chaitanya Charitamrita. Hare Krishna.
So, as you're probably aware, we are receiving...
I was aware, and then they made me unaware.
Okay.
Because I said, there's a meeting here, we'll go to the Prabhupada's room, and then several devotees said to me, there's no meeting. So we're almost done.
That's 5 o'clock.
That's 5 o'clock. Yeah. We're out of here.
Yeah. Once you're done. So
I'm now aware again. My illusion is now dispelled.
Okay.
And Okay, that's good. Yeah. All right. Yeah, we're winding up. So you're 5 o'clock. You're coming in.
Yes.
Yeah. So say it about if we leave at 1:45. Is that okay?
That's fine.
That's plenty.
I mean,
yeah.
What we're doing, we have a opposition leader from the Victorian.
Yep.
He's coming with his entourage.
What's his name?
I met the guy.
Yeah, I've met him before.
Yeah. Mm. So he's coming over just to see hello to the temple. Yeah. I mean, to the devotees of the temple. And expected around 5:15. So
yeah.
We just want to have everything ready by 5:05.
Very nice.
So no problem.
I told when they came, I happened to join in on the group as I walked into the temple, and Bhakti goes, tell them a little bit about the deity, Kangsha. And I was telling them, you know, here's this deity, here's this deity. Were you there?
Yeah. The
previous premier.
Ted Value.
Because. And look, as I was explaining Krishna, I told him that Krishna has 16,108 wives and live with each of them in a different palace.
Yeah.
And they both really smiled. I was like, that, you know, impressive. Like, you know, I was wondering what sort of reaction they'd have, but they were like really impressed. I said, that's God.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to be. But, yeah.
All right, that's good. Yeah, anyway, so we just
prepared. Yeah, okay, sounds good. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Yes, so very interesting. So then verse 23, after performing the ritualistic ceremonies, take charge of your father's kingdom, sit upon the throne, and do not be disturbed by materialistic activities. Please keep your mind fixed upon me. Without transgressing the injunctions of the Vedas, as a matter of formality, you may perform your particular duties. Purport. When one becomes a devotee, he no longer has any duty to the Vedic regulative principles. One has many duties to perform, but if one becomes fully devoted to the Lord, he no longer has any such obligations. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41. One who is fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord is no longer a debtor to his forefathers, the great sages, human society, the common man, or any living entity. The Supreme Personality of Godhead nonetheless advised Prahlad Maharaj to follow the regulative principles, for since he was going to be the king, others would follow his example. And this is where literally his performing activities as a sadhana siddha, that others can follow how to do their sadhana in Krishna consciousness, not that he's necessarily acting like a nitya siddha, with activities that may be very difficult for them to understand, that are completely aloof from all regular principles in this world. Thus, Lord Narasimhadev advised Prahlad Maharaj to engage in his political duties so that people would become the Lord's devotees. Quoting Bhagavad Gita 3:21, whatever action a great man performs, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. One should not be attached to any materialistic activities, but a devotee may perform such activities as an example to show the common man that one should not deviate from the Vedic injunctions. So, to help people have faith in the Vedas, and then as they get a better life, because they're following that superior path, then other things of the Vedas may be presented to them, and already they have faith in the devotee who's giving them faith in the Vedas, so their faith in the Vedas and the devotee just increases to the point where they may understand the bhakti, you know, feature of the Vedas. Sri Narada Muni continued, thus, as the Supreme Personality of God had ordered Prahlad Maharaj perform the ritualistic ceremonies for his father, O King Yudhisthira, he was then enthroned in the kingdom of Hiranyakashipu as directed by the Brahmanas. Here in the purport, here we see that although Prahlad was perfect in every respect, he nonetheless followed the instructions of the Brahmanas who performed the Vedic rituals. Therefore, in society, there must be a very intelligent class of leaders who are well versed in the Vedic knowledge so that they can guide the entire populace to follow the Vedic principles and gradually become most perfect and eligible to return home back to Godhead. So in the future, in different countries, devotees will take this role as Brahmanas. They will guide those who are not necessarily devotees, but who may be leaders of society, how to lead, to follow the Vedic principles, which are possible in Kali Yuga, and which are conducive ultimately to bhakti. They will help them to follow those, to gain faith in the Vedas and the Brahmanas, even though they're perfect devotees, perfectly situated. No, but one, if a leader is intelligent enough to understand that it's better if I'm guided by these devotee brahmanas. So the public have already put them in power. So, and then they can just take some guidance. You know, they already have the confidence of the public. Somehow or another they've got in power. And then the devotees can guide them. And, you know, following the Vedic injunctions means, you know, the minimum in this, you know, get married. You know, don't have so much of this. You know, probably, you know, like that. You know, educate the children and, you know, avoid killing, you know, unnecessarily. And, you know, just... So many of the Vedic things we cannot do, but, you know, there are basic things that can be done and should be done, and they can advise them. You know, no abortion and, you know, things like that. So, you know, there's some very substantial Vedic principles. They can't follow all sorts of intricate things, but, you know, and keep bathe and practice cleanliness. And, you know, there's basically, you know, Brahmanas can be educated in this way and Kshatriyas in that way. There's no use to educate them both the same. You know, so the education can be a little designed for Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras. So, you know, just some of the basic Vedic principles can be done. And, you know, the leaders who already have the confidence of the masses for some reason or another, you know, they like to make a movie star president, you know, of the United States. So if they get in power and that movie star happens to, you know, love the devotees, or a rock star, you know, like George Harrison, you know, if they had voted him, you know, the Prime Minister of England, he would have had devotees advising him. and he would have been very popular. Paul McCartney may become Prime Minister one day. We don't know. You know, so then you may have someone who's a devotee who may also just be very popular. You know, Radha Mitchell, she's a famous actress. She's born in a devotee family. Mother's a Prabhupada disciple, I think. You know, if she becomes a leader in the world, she's got a devotee background already. So, and then, you know, there are other situations where the people don't like the leaders, but they're going to demand that these leaders be thrown out and devotees be put in there. Sometimes the mass of the people are very, you know, we like these Hare Krishnas. And we don't like our leaders. And they'll demand, we want a devotee there like that. In some countries it's like that the masses will demand, we want a devotee. So, you know, it will gradually happen like that. And the high court judges will be wearing tilak. So, Lord Brahma, surrounded by the other demigods, was bright-faced because the Lord was pleased. Thus he offered prayers to the Lord with transcendental words. Lord Brahma said, O Supreme Lord of all lords, proprietor of the entire universe, O benefactor of all living entities, O original person, Adi Purush, because of our good fortune, you have now killed this sinful demon who is giving trouble to the entire universe. So we see there that for Brahma's good fortune, for the universe's good fortune, Hiranyakashipu, the Lord has nothing to gain or lose by killing the demons or making friends. This demon, Hiranyakashipu, received from me the benediction that he would not be killed by any living being within my creation. With this assurance and with strength derived from austerities and mystic power, he became excessively proud and transgressed all the Vedic injunctions. By great fortune, Hiranyakashipu's son, Prahlad Maharaj, has now been released from death, for though he is a child, he is an exalted devotee. Now he is fully under the protection of your lotus feet. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the Supreme Soul. If one meditates upon your transcendental body, you naturally protect him from all sources of fear, even the imminent danger of death. Purport. Everyone is sure to die, for no one is excused from the hands of death, which is but a feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one becomes a devotee, however, he is not destined to die according to a limited duration of life. Everyone has a limited duration of life, but a devotee's lifetime can be extended by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, who is able to nullify the results of one's karma. This is the statement of Brahma Samhita. A devotee is not under the laws of karma. Therefore, even a devotee's scheduled death can be avoided by the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. God protects the devotee even from the extreme danger of death. Actually, my spiritual master said that about my wife. As all the indications were that she should have died long ago. And he says, Krishna has delivered you from the jaws of death. So, you know, he's... the Lord can extend the time limit of a devotee if they're, you know, almost achieving perfection, and the Lord thinks, you know, another few years and they'll be fully purified, and give them those few years, the last life, and let them go back to Godhead. Or sometimes the Lord decides this devotee is already purified, completely purified, completely surrendered. I have service for them in another universe. Pop them out. They should have lived another 20 years. I'll take that one now. You know, I always think of that when I think of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. You know, it's like Krishna's got some, you know, other service. I want you right now when you're needed. You're needed somewhere else, and that. And so, you know, Jai Pitaka Maharaj, you know, is like, always seems to be, you know, on the verge of leaving this world, you know, but it's all in Krishna's hands, you know. And, So the personality of Godhead replied, and, you know, so a devotee asked me the other day, he said, I want you to tell me, you know, astrologer, when I'm going to die. I never do that. It's one of the things I don't like to do. But especially for devotees, because it's, you know, you can see, well, probably about then, but that's really up to Krishna. You know, it's not like your karmic thing is fixed like others. You know, Krishna may play around with it a little bit just to make me look like a fool. So... The personality of Godhead replied, my dear Brahma, O great Lord, born from the lotus flower, just as it is dangerous to feed milk to a snake, so it is dangerous to give benedictions to demons who are by nature ferocious and jealous. I warn you not to give such benedictions to any demon again. Narada Muni continued. So that's probably the last time Brahma did that. So someone says, oh, these demigods are always given these benedictions. Well, not always. They do come to an end of it. O King Yudhisthira, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is not visible to an ordinary human being, spoke in this way, instructing Lord Brahma. Then being worshipped by Brahma, the Lord disappeared from that place. Prahlad Maharaj then worshipped and offered prayers to all the demigods such as Brahma, Shiva and the Prajapatis, who are all parts of the Lord. Therefore, thereafter, along with Prahlad Maharaj worshipped and offered prayers to all the demigods. He's a pure devotee. But he's not being disrespectful. They're parts of the Lord and they're doing so much nice service. Why should he not offer them respect and still be a pure devotee? Thereafter, along with Sukracharya and other great saints, Lord Brahma, whose seat is on the lotus flower, made Prahlad Maharaj the king of all the demons and giants in the universe. So, in the purport, by the grace of Lord Narsingha, Prahlad became a greater king than his father. O King Yudhisthira, after all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma were properly worshipped by Prahlad Maharaj, they offered Prahlad their utmost benedictions and then returned to their respective abodes. Thus the two associates of the Lord, Vishnu, who had become Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, the sons of Diti, were both killed. By illusion, they had thought that the Supreme Lord, who was situated in everyone's heart, was their enemy. Purport. The discourse concerning Lord Narsingadev and Prahlad Maharaj began when Maharaj Yudhisthira asked Narada how Sisapal had merged into the body of Krishna. Sisapal and Dankravakra were the same Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Here, Narada Muni is relating how in three different births the associates of Lord Vishnu were killed by Lord Vishnu himself. First, they were the demons Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Translation. Being cursed by the Brahmanas, the same two associates took birth again as Kumbhakarna and the ten-headed Ravana. These two Rakshasas were killed by Lord Ramchandra's extraordinary power. Pierced by the arrows of Lord Ramchandra, both Kumbhakarna and Ravana lay on the ground and left their bodies fully absorbed in thought of the Lord, just as they had in their previous births as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. They both took birth again in human society as Sisapal and Dantavakra and continued in the same enmity toward the Lord. It is they who merged into the body of the Lord in your presence. And we see here, so some becoming the enemy, and Rupa Goswami is saying, Tasma kanap upayena. Once you become attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and ultimately achieve the goal of returning back to Godhead. What then is said to be said of one who is related to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a servant, friend, father, mother, or conjugal lover? Translation. Not only Sisipala and Dankravakra, but also many, many other kings who acted as enemies of Krishna attained salvation at the time of death because they thought of the Lord, they received spiritual bodies and forms the same as his. Just as worms captured by a black drone obtain the same body, type of body, as the drone. Purport. The mystery of yogic meditation is explained here. Real yogis always meditate on the form of Vishnu within their hearts. Consequently, at the time of death, they give up their bodies while thinking of the form of Vishnu and thus attain Vishnu Loka, Vaikuntha Loka, where they receive bodily features the same as those of the Lord. From the sixth canto, we have already learned that when the Vishnu Dutas came from Vaikuntha to deliver Arjamil, they looked exactly like Vishnu with four hands and the same features as Vishnu. Therefore, we may conclude that if one practices thinking of Vishnu and is fully absorbed in thinking of him, at the time of death, one returns home back to Godhead. Even enemies of Krishna who thought of Krishna in fear, such as Kamsa, receive bodies in a spiritual identity similar to that of the Lord. It's an interesting statement about Kamsa, isn't it? Ultimately, he achieved a spiritual body. Text 40. By devotional service, pure devotees who incessantly think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead receive bodies similar to his. This is known as Sarupya Mukti. Although Sisipala, Dantavakra and other kings thought of Krishna as an enemy, they also achieved the same results. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in connection with Lord Chaitanya's instruction to Sanatana Goswami, it is explained that a devotee should externally execute his routine devotional service in a regular way, but should inwardly always think of the particular mellow in which he is attracted to the service of the Lord. This constant thought of the Lord makes the devotee eligible to return home back to Godhead. See, here again Prabhupada is saying, we think of serving Krishna in a particular way according to our desire, but that desire of ours is based upon, you know, the purification when we realize that my eternal spiritual identity and nature is like this, and Krishna receives happiness from me serving him in this way, like conjugal friend, like that. So then we have that desire. This is what gives Krishna happiness, so I desire to serve Krishna in that way. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Chakvadi Hampana Janma Naiti Mamiti Sojana. After giving up his body, a devotee does not again receive a material body, but goes back to Godhead and receives a spiritual body resembling those of the Lord's associates whose activities he followed. However the devotee likes to serve the Lord, he may constantly think of the Lord's associates, the cowherd boys, the gopis, the Lord's father and mother, his servants, and the trees, land, animals, plants and water in the Lord's abode. Because of constantly thinking of these features, one acquires a transcendental position. See, so those who model their devotional service on the conjugal rasa will naturally be thinking, you know, they particularly like to hear and chant about the gopis' pastimes with Krishna, like that. Of course, for preaching, as Prabhupada did, they're constantly preaching Bhagavad Gita, Ishupanishad, like that, for preaching. But internally, you know, even when preaching the ABCs of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, their meditation, that they don't forget that beautiful pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, or, you know, Krishna with the cow, you know, according to their inclination, that is there. That, you know, those pastimes are always there. Yeah. because of constantly thinking of these, so kings like Sisipal, Dantavakra, Kamsa, Pondraka, Narakasura, and Shalva were all similarly delivered, confirmed by Madhvacharya. It says Pondraka, Narakasura, Shalva, and Kamsa were all inimical toward the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because all these kings constantly thought of him, they achieved such liberation. Sarupya Mukti. The Jnana Bhakta, the devotee who follows the path of Jnana, also attains the same destination. If even the enemies of the Lord achieve salvation by constantly thinking of the Lord, what is to be said of pure devotees who always engage in the Lord's service and who think of nothing but the Lord in every activity? Text 41. Everything you asked me about how Sisipala and others attained salvation, although they were inimical, has now been explained to you by me. In this narration about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, various expansions or incarnations of the Lord have been described, and the killing of the two demons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, have also been described. So, down the bottom of this purport, it says that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the original Lord. Prahlad Maharaj is our Guru, and Krishna is our worshipful God. As advised by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we can be successful in getting the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj and also that of Nrisimhadev, then our Krishna consciousness movement will be extremely successful. That's how we, you know, worship Narasimha. The demon Hiranyakashipu had so many ways to try to become God himself, but although Prahlad Maharaj was chastised and threatened in many ways, he rigidly refused to accept his powerful demoniac father as God. Following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, we should reject all the rascals who pretend to be God. We must accept Krishna and his incarnations and no one else. And see how we take this whole pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu and bring it back to our requirements, and that is, why are we praying to Lord Narasimhadev, you know, in what mood, for what purpose, and to Prahlad Maharaj, so that we can preach Krishna consciousness and not, you know, defy all these so-called gods under the protective shelter of Lord Narasimha. And we will only accept Krishna like that. And we feel confident that in this crazy world of demons, worshipping other demons as God, that we will be protected and we will preach. And this Sankirtan movement, they may try to hamper us, but we will be successful. In that mood, we pray to Narasimha. This narration describes the characteristics of the great and exalted devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, and his staunch devotional service, his perfect knowledge, his perfect detachment from material contamination. It also describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the cause of creation, maintenance and annihilation. Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers has described the transcendental qualities of the Lord and has also described how the various abodes of the demigods and demons, regardless of how materially opulent, are destroyed by the mere dictation of the Lord. The principle of religion by which one can actually understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called Bhagavad Dham. In this narration, therefore, which deals with these principles, actual transcendence is properly described. One who hears and chants this narration about the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is certainly liberated from material bondage without fail. Prahlad Maharaj was the best among exalted devotees. Anyone who with great attention hears this narration concerning the activities of Prahlad Maharaj, the killing of Hiranyakashipu, and the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nrisimhadev, surely reaches the spiritual world where there is no anxiety. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. There's a nice little benediction for all of us, isn't it? And we didn't even ask for one. All right. We better, just like Lord Narasimha, we should try and disappear so they can use this room. Hare Krishna. And this man of Shingi is going to disappear as well. All right, well, we'll see you next week. So that other little pastime must be about that must come up here. Anyway. Oh yeah, the Maya Dhanava and, you know, Tripurari, that's in the next thing. So that's a whole different thing.